Get ready to take a look behind the scenes and enter the impossible for the Between Two Minds podcast with our hosts, Judge Mentalist and Bernardo Rodriguez. Can they really tell you what you're thinking?
What up, what up, what up?
What's going on? It's Between Two Minds behind the scenes.
Yeah. And we got Judge Mentalist and we got me, Bernardo Rodriguez, and we will be talking about our show for Cecil College, where we've done so many fundraisers, I can't think too much, so I'll let you describe what it was for.
So this was for their the women's volleyball team, and for anybody that somehow is just stumbling upon this now and does not know kind of what we do plenty of like ticketed public stage shows that are just what they are, but our wheelhouse really, and we are happy, excited, comfortable doing fundraiser shows. So we've got a discount, not really a discounted price, but we have a pricing structure that is such that no group that works with us, nonprofit, school groups, whatever it is, you know, we're happy to help with the cause. You cannot lose money doing one of our shows. You know, we do a door split, which means you don't pay us up front. You only pay us based on tickets that are sold. We provide to organizations who maybe haven't done something like this because it's a unique idea. We provide an ever-evolving guide to help you promote the show and make sure that you're selling tickets and fill the room. And we also cap that fee. And that cap varies based on where we're going and what our travel costs and lodging costs are going to be. But it's incredibly affordable. Our goal is to make sure that the organization is making more money than we are each and every time. We do whatever we can on the promo side to promote it. So this was one like that. And we were contacted by the girls volleyball or women's volleyball team at Cecil College to help them raise some money, and we were happy to do so.
Oh yeah. It was a overall very solid show, and I got to do something that I had wanted to try, but I was kind of forced to do it, which was exciting because it went very well, and I don't really plan to go back. And Atlanta was a little different, but we'll get to that when we explain that show. But I had to work with a handheld mic. So normally, you know, we have the XLR piece, or I have like another method in which I can plug in like a headset. And in this case, we did not have that option due to the tech that they had access to. So I was like, all right, whatever, you know, I'll just use a handheld mic. Right before the show, I learned a really solid technique of just wedging that mic under your armpit. Shout out to Judge Mentalist on that one. And,
Hey, don't give me credit for that. That's Max Maven.
Hey, but you're the one that told me right before it. Cause I was sitting here thinking, true. Man, yeah, that was a ton of fun, and that was really solid experience. I don't think I'll go back. In fact, I have this like feeling that or this theory that jokes are twice as funny when you're holding the mic. I'm gonna stick to that now because I feel like every joke I said was just hitting, mainly because I had the luxury of like holding the mic and kind of looking around. I don't really know how to describe it, but it was very successful. I plan to use a handheld mic at every show. And if I ever run into a scenario where I need both my hands, I either one wedge it or two, the other thing that I was doing was just, hey, here, you're my helper. I'm going to have you be my mic stand for a minute. And I have them hold my mic, and it worked very well and added a fun element to it. But that for me was huge because I had never done that, and I had wanted to, because the biggest issue I was always afraid of was there was going to be a point in my show where I was going to have to start needing a handheld mic and my headset mic to give to the spectator, because you could never hear them and they can never talk loud enough to hear into my headset. So I was either just repeating what they said, which is fine, but it needed to eventually to fill in like that space. I was going to need that.
You want, especially like you've got moments in your show where the questions that you ask people on stage are designed to, and same thing with my half of the show, designed to elicit unique and interesting responses. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to hit the same way by you just saying it versus, you know, repeating what they say versus
them.
Okay, cool. They actually get to hear it and see it. Yes.
Agreed. And that was going to rely on me eventually adding a handheld mic with my headset mic, which anybody that works with enough tech, you can't always mitigate interception. So there was a high chance that every time I passed by a handheld mic, there was going to be some feedback that was non-desirable. So I was always going to be battling with that. And obviously with, you know, testing things out prior and rehearsal of audio, you know, you can test those in some instances, but you can't always account for certain things. And I've seen that too many times than not, where it becomes more hassle than it's worth, especially if you're bringing in your own equipment. So I've realized that, you know, if I can get used to the handheld mic, all I got to do is tip it to their mouth. So now I'm only dealing with one mic. You know, I can get a mic stand at some points where I can have it sit there and or for the spectator. And
I did the Stacey Stardust show mostly off of a handheld mic in a mic stand, at least for the second half when I was doing staple guns.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and
it's fun.
Yeah. And it adds another kind of dynamic of things to like block and stuff like that. And that's areas where I plan to work on it. But that was a huge breakthrough for me because it forced me into that scenario and I won't go back because I was always afraid. I was like, I don't think I could do my routines without my hands. And I found that I don't need to touch as many objects and move as many things around as I initially was and thought I needed to. So it was a big eye opener for me as well there. And I also eliminated the two openers that I wanted to eliminate since the beginning of the show, since before I even started it. I knew I wasn't going to have them there for long. And I got to incorporate a new opening piece that involved a lot of danger and talked a little bit about a recent conflict in my life where I had some chest pain and it was more of a medical issue. And that turned into a really fun presentation that I almost wish I had a camera pointed to the audience because I could see the second I mentioned the chest pain bit, I could just see like everyone's eyes widen, like, wait, what? And it felt like they were connecting with that moment. And I felt like that trick just hit. I'm going to save the ending for anybody that comes to see it because it will be the one I use more often than not. Traveling with this idea isn't so much is possible, but I think moving forward, it might still be something I travel with. I just, you know, put it in a check bag or something and just call it a day because I think it's well worth doing so. So it definitely filled in an area of the show that I really wanted to incorporate and it added another kind of level of dynamic to it. So it went very well. I got to, from my lesson that I learned from a previous show, I got to bring a kid up to do the drawing bit. I think I learned that from the Tome show, if I remember correctly. And I was like, oh, I'll just get the young kid. You know, she was super like, she was super kind of interactive and she was really polite, kind of sitting there with her hand up. And I was just like, you know, I'm going to bring you up. And I got to try that out and realize, you know, that effect can work that way. Cause I wasn't always sure. And now, you know, I'm always excited to, you know, bring kids up for that because I'll tell you what, out of the two kids I've brought thus far, I think actually I might be at three. I can't remember. Those were the best artists for drawing for the drawing bit. and one of them drew.
Funny how that works.
The kid, I think, for the Cecil College drew Nightmare, and the amount of detail that he put on that, I was like, oh, my God, this is great. And they were saying you were, you know, struggling getting that marker out, you know. Everybody drew, like, stick figures and really small things, like a little snake that was hard to tell it was a snake. And this dude drew a whole scene. It was great. But I got to there were a lot of lessons I got to incorporate in this and a lot of lessons that I learned. So I'm super excited. I think overall my kind of the evolution of my part of the show, this was a big leap forward for me and I'm definitely glad that it happened. But I'll let you talk about your part cause this was a fun one as well.
Well, I mean, it was an interesting and different one. You know, I don't really know. There was just a different feeling about this show and about the audience, and nothing bad, but it just, this one for me didn't hit as hard as some of the other ones do. It certainly, and we'll get to this in the next episode, didn't hit nearly as hard as the Atlanta show. So if you're somehow stumbling into this podcast episode as the first one, definitely hit that Atlanta one. And all of this stuff, if you want to see the hypnosis portion of these shows, are available on our Patreon. And if you're unfamiliar with what that is, patreon.com/between two minds. It is a community that we're building that is absolutely free to join. There are currently three tiers that are set up there. And the vast majority of what content we're providing there, it's kind of a different behind the scenes layer, is available at the free tier. So do not go onto that site and feel obligated to sign up for one of the paid tiers. However, if you do sign up, there's a tier that will get you some more behind the scenes stuff. That one's, it's only $5 a month. It's not really realized what we're going to do there. And then there's another tier, which I think is $20 or $25, where all of the show videos, the hypnosis show videos that become available for sale individually are included. So, you know, we do a minimum of one show a month. A lot of times we do more. And so the moment that we do two shows in a month, it's a bargain. I've got a run coming up in August, July into August, where I'm going to do a minimum of five shows, which means you're going to get all five of those shows by being a member at that $25 tier. I just booked five shows at the Rochester, New York Fringe Festival. That's five shows. That's five more videos that you're going to get in that particular month. So just those two runs alone make it worth it for the whole year. Everything else is gravy. Oh, yeah. So definitely check that out. You can see these full shows. So you'll be able to see it. Just, you know, it was a couple of things that, again, as I'm kind of getting my footing into place to do this on a more consistent and regular basis, there's kind of little things that you forget and overlook sometimes. And, you know, this was a fundraiser for a group of people who sold to friends, sold to family members. So it was a similar situation like the holiday party where a lot of people knew each other. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I forgot to do, I had two best friends sitting next to each other up on stage. So separating those people is usually important. Trying to kind of spread people out so that they're not sitting beside somebody and trying to pay attention to what their friend is doing is really a key component. Because if you can't relax and let go, you're not going to get, you know, under. And if you do, you're not going to get under very deep. Yeah. But all in all, it wasn't bad. There were certainly some high points, certainly some things worth making highlights of. Yeah. We played around with the 360 camera for the first time, in addition to our normal camera, which allowed me to capture audience members. And you'll see on TikTok, on my TikTok, just search for Judgmentalist, there's a clip on there of a dad in the front row teaching his kid how to make it rain with the napkins that are part of the $100 bill routine. And really they're relevant throughout the almost entire show. So it was super fun to be able to capture something like that. So yeah, there was, you know, it was a different environment. We were in a gymnasium. So the lighting is different than what we're used to. The echoes are different and the sound kind of dynamics are a little bit different. It doesn't stop the show from going on. In fact, when we get to Atlanta, you're going to find out that nothing stops the show from going on. Absolutely nothing stops the show from going on. Yeah. And there are many, many ways in which all of the shitty elements of that show make it my favorite. But again, we'll get to that next time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I mean, that's kind of the rundown of what I have on that. Definitely come see us if you haven't. And as you have learned from what Bernardo was talking about here, we're always tweaking and refining this show. Yeah. It's always something a little bit different. We're plugging and playing different routines. I've got a fluid set list. Like, I've got base elements to my set that are going to be there, and then other stuff that gets moved in and moved out based on how good my spectators, my volunteers are. So yeah, you're always going to see something new, unique, and different. So yeah, check us out. That's it, betweentwominds.com. What's what you got the wraps on the next show that we're doing publicly?
Yeah, so we are doing a show on April 27th. That is going to be for the Northeast High School in support of the marching band, which is gonna be fun. So far, the shows in Northeast for schools have been great. Like, I think of the Tome one, and man, that was awesome. I look forward to potentially seeing some similar faces, a bunch of new faces, and I think
the Tome show. Let's see. There's a lot of times with these shows, your performance, your act is the strongest one, the most compelling for the audience. And sometimes it's mine. But the Tome show, both of them just blasted everybody out of the water. Atlanta, which we'll talk about next time, both sides blasted everything out of the water. A couple of the earlier ones, not all of them. So again, some of them were more, you know, my side was more memorable. Some of them, your side was more memorable. I'd say that was certainly the case here with the Cecil College one. You were the strong point from everybody's recollection from this one. But it's cool when we get one where it just hits real hard on both sides. It's nothing better.
And I also think too that the more we're doing this, and closer together for that matter, the more things we're able to adapt to kind of mitigate things in our favor. So I think we had a strong show at like Atlanta and a few others that are memorable, like the second show, because of how the interactions came with the audience. I think that also kind of gauges like how under a lot of people get, because they almost loosen up more. So I think as we start to learn, and as you mentioned, as we evolve the show more, it's gonna also evolve kind of that happy medium where we're both where we're at. But yeah, there's times where, you know, I didn't think it did that great. And then I'll even go back and look at the footage and be like, wow, you know, the reaction was actually crazy. Like, I think of the Fifth Company one, for example. That was one where I was like, ooh, I tried to do a whole new show. And I was like, this was not really it for me. Like, there were areas where I was like, oh, that was kind of on me. I also, you know, decided, you know, I'm dealing with a drinking audience. Let's do a trick that has a big process and things for people to remember, because that's what a drinking audience is ready to do. That was also a mistake. But it's also some of the best footage in my promo, because the reactions were really strong, but I was so far in my head, I couldn't see any of that. There's some of that as well, like shows where you don't think you were as strong have great moments and, you know, parts. So it's not
And the wild thing with your show, specifically at Fifth Company, is that you didn't just tweak it. You totally blew it up and said, I'm going to do a whole new version of it. And part of that was because we had just done the show a few weeks earlier, very close to there. More and more, we're learning that, hey, the handful of people that are going to come to the show again and again don't care. They're there because they know that there are elements that have to do with the audience that make the show different every single time, both in your half and in my half.
It was a lesson learned by me for sure. Cause
sure.
Yeah.
but there were certainly some keepers and certainly some things that need to be tweaked there. Yeah. But that's what we're doing, man. We're working toward, you know, climbing the ladder with this thing. And great. I think every opportunity that we get to improve it, we do. You know, a lot of people will put a set together and will perform, and then they just go on autopilot and they're doing the same show that they did 20 years ago. And that just, it gets old. It sucks, you know? Yeah. So we're active, you know, we record every one of our shows. We release the hypnosis part for sale. If we're doing a fundraiser, if you want to give money to any of these organizations, make sure you buy the video for our fundraiser shows, because into perpetuity, it's not like, hey, for the month of the show, anybody who buys the video, we're going to kick back money. It is forever. As long as those videos are there and available for sale, if 10 years from now, you buy video to the Cecil College Women's Volleyball Fundraiser Show, I'm cutting them a check. It's going to be a totally new coach. They're going to have no clue who I am. I mean, maybe they do. Maybe we go back and do that show every year. But we're just going to keep giving them money. So buy those videos, support those causes, And I think that, you know, over time, you're going to see that more and more of our shows end up being for causes. We're going to be doing some stuff like fringe festivals. Fringe festivals are going to obligate us most of the time to split the show in two. Yeah. So you may see one of us or the other. You may get to see both. Like, I've got a sneaking suspicion that we're both going to end up doing shows at Baltimore's Fringe Festival.
I also feel so, because, and I will also add this for anyone doing Fringe, Baltimore's Fringe, the Charm City Fringe, had the most elaborate sign up I've done thus far. Like, the questions they had, like, write your show in 10 words and then 50 words. And I'm like, I wrote probably the illest 50 line and 10 line. Like, it was so good that I felt like I like passed the test with like an A+. Like, that's how that felt. So I can very much imagine we will do it. And hopefully, when we both get that email, we can say, hey, is it possible?
How about you stack us?
How do we? Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Stack us. Cause my suggestion would be, and I don't know what they do pricing wise. I think their shows are like $20. Do the shows for $20 or do a 2-for-1. Let people buy a combo ticket where they get to go to your show and stick around for mine and have it only cost $30. Cause I don't mind losing the money. I don't give a shit. I just want people in the room. I want to do the show. I want my time. You know, I need money for my time, obviously, because I'm not doing other things, but I don't need to get rich doing this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this flight time's so crazy, especially for cool friends. Stuff. This is good. But yeah, last note.
Between2minds.com.
Yeah, but before you add the website, the last note as well, anyone listening to this saying, man, I have a fundraiser or something that we want to raise money for, reach out to us. Go to between2minds.com and reach out. We would be happy to try to set up a fundraiser. You know, you push tickets, we make the show great.
Yeah. That's the cool thing about it is that our show, even though we're always tweaking it, you don't have to worry about it, okay? We'll talk to you ahead of time about what kind of technical setup you have. As you'll learn in the next episode, we're going to work within whatever you've got, all right? When we did that Fringe show in Baltimore last year, which we talked about on here, we worked off the floor. They had a stage, but there was a whole freaking string orchestra set up on it to act just before us. And we're like, we're not going to make those people rip their stuff down. We're just going to work off the floor. And it went perfectly well. Yeah. So we'll adapt to whatever environment we need to adapt to. So don't worry about that. You know, don't sit here and think, well, we don't have access to a proper theater. We can't host you. Just call us.
We did it in a brewery.
We've done it on a gymnasium floor, on a basketball court type of thing. Like, it doesn't matter. We'll do it. You know, so, and it doesn't matter if you don't have the top-notch tech stuff, we're going to work within it. And again, so make sure you tune into the next episode where we talk about the Atlanta show to find out how serious I am about us working in whatever environment we've got.
Yeah, guerrilla style to the best.
For sure.
But all right, guys, till next time, peace out.
Adios.
Thank you for tuning in to the Between Two Minds Behind the Scenes podcast. Be sure to follow us on social media under Between Two Minds with the number 2 instead of TWO or under Enter the Impossible. Thank you, and we hope to see you back for the next episode.